Thanks for spending some of your time with us today on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Larry's back tomorrow. We're going to start this hour by talking about the unique history of the city of Greendale. And in case you didn't know, it's located just southwest of Milwaukee. We have a couple of experts on Greendale with us. Ted Manila is the treasurer and past president of the Greendale Historical Society. And with him is Mary Manila. She's the manager of the house on Apple Court. It's a renovated short-term rental owned by the Greendale Historical Society. Now, have you been to Greendale? What do you think? Do you think that Planned City should be revived? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mary, Ted, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes. Thanks for inviting us.
You bet. Well, we had a listener say, hey, when we had an open mic, that you should talk about Greendale. And I said, well, that's a great idea. So here we are. Now, you both were born and raised in Greendale, right?
Correct. We were.
And Ted, I believe that you have a story to tell about you and Mary. Ted, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. You just cut out just a little bit, so hopefully we're back with you.
Oh, hopefully. We're having problems with that today, but I believe that you and Mary went to school together.
Well, yes, we did. We were both born in Greendale and lived here with our parents, of course, in the Greendale original. But then we also both went to Greendale High School, which is where we first met. We went out together in high school for a little bit and then later in college. And we've been happily married for 57 years.
Well, that's amazing. you had mentioned that a Greendale original. Why don't you explain what that is, Mary?
Well, an original are one of the homes that were designed.
Okay.
1936 is when they began, and that's what we have all as part of our entire community museum, we call it, because these originals reflect the National Historic Landmark we are, and they are very unique. I like the fact that you used that word before. We are totally unique. But the homes, there's about 572 units within the original part of Greendale, and that's why we call the homes original.
I noticed that on some of the things I was looking at, that there was this the originals. And at first I'm like, what are they talking about? But that makes sense, because you have more than just the buildings that were built at that time right now, right?
That's right, yeah. It's a larger community, of course. But
of course. Now, back in 2012, Greendale was named a National Historic Landmark. Are there lots of cities that get that designation, or is that kind of rare, Ted?
Actually, it's rather rare. The Village of Greendale, through one of our members, Kathleen Hart, started working on a campaign along with another our president at the time, Sally Chadwick, in applying for National Historic Landmark designation. So it's a rather arduous process. It's issued by the United States Government Department of Interior. And after going through that process over a couple of years, Greendale was designated that. So it's really one of the rare instances where an entire community, rather than a single artifact or a single object, is recognized with that designation. So we're very pleased and very proud of that designation.
And what does that designation do for the city itself?
Well, again, I hope you can still hear me. The designation, above all, gives the community a chance to really explain that designation to visitors, and that, you know, they realize that the significance of the community is unique in all of the United States. So the wording says it's a significant in American history. And as a historical society, you know, we think that's very important. We work very hard as an organization to not only preserve our buildings, but to share the Greendale story with people just like we're doing today.
Well, let's share that story. Let's get down to the facts now. Mary, Greendale is one of three Greenbelt communities that were built during the Great Depression. What did FDR hope to achieve by creating these green towns?
I'm sorry, because it was cut off. I didn't quite hear that question.
Okay.
What are the other two towns? Is that what you wish
no,
to hear?
No, I was just wondering, what was Franklin Roosevelt trying to achieve by creating the Green Towns program?
Well, I mean, he was trying to demonstrate a new type of living that would use farmland outside of major industrial cities. He also wanted to provide work for the men, many of them still out of work, laborers, construction workers, particularly because they just weren't building during the Depression. So it provided, you know, that opportunity. And it also was for the shortage of housing for the people that did have jobs in the city. I mean, because we had places like Ellis Chalmers and so forth, there were they couldn't build a home. And the house, apparently Milwaukee was really overcrowded and even had tenement type housing and things like that. It was kind of bad at the time. So they wanted new homes for them, affordable for them to rent. And, you know, the idea of having kind of the country atmosphere as well.
I mean, we're kind of in that situation today, aren't we, where affordable housing is very difficult to find. Has anybody, like, come to Greendale and said, now, how did this work? Can we maybe duplicate it at this point?
Well, Ted, have there been some people of that sort that you're aware of?
Yeah, that's a great question. Greendale often shows up in scholarly studies, architectural studies. And I'll just give you an example of the design of Greendale. It's considered very pedestrian friendly. There are very few through streets. Speed limits don't exceed 25 miles an hour. Most of the homes are on streets that are cul-de-sacs. And this contributes not only to a much safer environment, but it's also ringed by a green belt of land to prevent encroachment from other areas. And, you know, people have come to us, contacted the Historical Society. In fact, a group from Alabama is coming to visit in October for that very reason, because they're community shares many of those design elements. So,
Now, we had talked a little bit, Mary, about why Greendale was chosen as one of the cities in the Green Towns program, and there were two others in the country, right? Where were they?
They were Green Hills, Ohio, which is right outside of Cincinnati, and Greenbelt, Maryland, which is right outside of Washington, D.C.
And how many acres of land did the government buy? And who did they buy it from?
That's a question. I know that it's probably something my husband might know the actual numbers. I want to say it was like, you know, 34,000, but that sounds kind of crazy. But they did buy it from the farmers that were surrounding this area, many who were perhaps, you know, living as farmers do from, you know, what's on their own land, but they weren't willing to sell it. So I think the price that the government offered must have been tempting, and that's what happened as far as we're aware.
Ted, do you know how many acres?
I think it was, I think my wife had an extra zero to it, but it was about 3,000 acres.
How much was it?
There's a great story involved in that, the acquisition of farmland. You know, Greendale was all farmland in 1935 when the government started looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great book written by Arnie Allenon, who's a professor emeritus at UW-Madison, called Main Street Ready Made. And the Greendale Historical Society now as the publisher of that book called Main Street Ready Made. And it goes through and it chronicles all that. And just to answer your question specifically about the land, the federal government, being mindful of the fact that they wanted to use taxpayer dollars responsibly, came in and started to buy up farms one by one. There were a lot of small farms, so it wasn't just one big 1,000-acre farm. There were several 20-acre farms. And over a period of time, the government came into Greendale, which was to become Greendale, and started buying up that farm property piece by piece. And in the Main Street Ready Made book, Professor Allen details a story where one stubborn holdout refused to sell to the government until he got his price.
So did people know that this was going on, or was it kind of a secret thing?
It was kind of a secret, but after a while, at least that stubborn farmer caught on and negotiated a better price than some of his fellow farmers did.
So, okay. So why don't you give us the layout and design of Greendale? It's basically a garden city concept, right? What's that?
Sure, exactly. Greendale, presently is bordered roughly on the north by West Edgerton, on the south by College Avenue, on the east by 51st Street, and by the on the west by 76th Street, by 92nd Street. So it's still a small community.
Mm-hmm.
But the original community, as Mary said, there were only 572 living spaces, so the population was around 3,000 before it expanded. But what we call, as Mary mentioned, the originals are these unique styled, often two-story homes of about 1,100 square feet each that were designed for families with children.
And what were the requirements in order to... You were renting a home now from the government, right? You didn't own these homes at the time. What were the requirements, Mary? Do you know those?
Well, I do know that there was quite a process that you had to go through. But one of the biggest things was your income. You could not have too little and you could not have too much. So that was a very important factor because they wanted, the people that really needed this kind of housing to qualify. Also, a big factor was the number of children you had. So there were these homes, but you couldn't say, I want to rent this one or I want to rent that one. They looked at the number of kids you had and assigned you a home that had the appropriate bedrooms and so forth. And there was, a consideration about your character and that sort of thing that they, they were a little bit fussy from what we understand, but... And some people thought it was a little bit, socialistic or communistic, apparently. But ultimately, it all did work out. And I think the majority of the people did have occupations on the south side and some of the major, as I said before, industrial companies. And that's what helped them get these jobs. I know that's when my father, that's what happened. He was working at Allen Bradley and other men that lived in Greendale told him about Greendale, and then, they applied to live here and pay $19 a month for rent.
Yes. Very unlike today. And let's talk about the city center, Ted. How important was that for this community?
Well, that's a great question because all of Greendale was designed, and it carries that over today, that we're one of the few communities in the surrounding area suburbs of Milwaukee that have a central downtown. And when the designers developed the outline for Greendale, they wanted to make it self-contained. So originally Greendale had a movie theater, it had a library, the school, it had a drugstore, it had a grocery store. And one of the, they surveyed people, so the government didn't just decide to build this. They surveyed folks and said, if we're going to build a town, what else do you need in that town? Well, they needed all those things that I just mentioned. But this is Milwaukee, right? So they, one of the things that was high on the list, they have to have a tavern.
So of
they
course.
Built a tavern in the center of Greendale called the, it was called the Greendale Village Inn. And it actually still stands today under different names. It's Joey Girard's now, but it is on the National Register of Historic Places, and it's part of the national landmark as having survived since 1938. So Greendale today continues to be a vibrant town. There are several shops, stores, areas where people can shop, go out for lunch, go out for dinner. It's a very vibrant town, and we have a welcome center that the Historical Society works with in the village of Greendale. People can come to the center of Greendale and stop in the welcome center and learn all about the opportunities that they have to spend some time here.
And if you do decide to spend some time, you can also stay at the Apple Courthouse, which is so unusual because the Historical Society actually owns it. Mary, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, the home itself was chosen by us, or allowed, I guess we were allowed to purchase it, but partly because it had not been altered. Two rather reclusive women had lived there since 1952 when they purchased it and had not made any major changes. So this was so exciting. The county at first thought that they would restore this and flip it. And ultimately, we got the chance to buy it, and we did all the heavy work that was required, along with many professionals like plumbers and electricians and so forth, and then attempted to make it look as it did in 1938. We were fortunate to have photos from the model home that Eleanor Roosevelt went through in Greendale, and so we kind of tried to duplicate that as best we could, and fortunately even had some furniture that was donated to us by persons who had lived in the early days of Greendale. And that beautiful amber maple furniture was made by the craftsmen that in Washington, D.C., actually. And they shipped it out to people that wanted to purchase that furniture. And so now we have some original furniture in our original home, and it looks like 1938. Won't look like something you ever saw.
Right. It really does. Now, you rent it out as a short-term rental, and you can see pictures of it. I believe you do VRBO and Airbnb, right?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Does it book out pretty often?
It does. Primarily weekends, you know, people coming in for special events. But this summer, it's been very busy, and, you know, because I have to be there, even though we have, you know, cleaning service and all this stuff, I'm, you know, over there quite a bit, you know, making sure everything's going okay.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy.
And this is all volunteer, and all the profits go to the Historical Society. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wonderful. Yes. I love that. It's a huge undertaking, but it sounds like you have a very active Historical Society. Would you say that, Ted?
Yeah, we're really very fortunate. In fact, we're celebrating, the Historical Society is celebrating its 50th anniversary as an organization this year. So we began in 1975, and we list about 300 members, and we've done a number of projects. You know, Mary was just talking about the house on Apple Court. But in addition to that, the Greendale Historical Society worked together with the community and raised $600,000 to restore one of its iconic buildings that we refer to as the Host Tower. And that's also available. The Village of Greendale owns it, but it's available for parties and rentals and weddings. And it's a really a neat venue right in the heart of Greendale. And we also have an antique fire engine called the Diamond T. And all of this is member supported, so we don't have any paid staff. We don't get funding from any other entity.
That's wonderful.
We're an independent group with a real vibrant membership.
Well, I think we have time just for one short comment from Jim in Stevens Point. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, good morning. So I grew up in Greendale. My parents moved there in the late 1950s. My dad worked at Cutler Hammer Corporation, and I believe that they bought a home show model home, and it was located right behind the high school on a farm field. And as a kid, it was just a great place to grow up because you could get everywhere on your bike. There were trails, there were sidewalks. It was just a wonderful place to live. Since then, I've come back to Stevens Point with my daughters to visit grandparents when they lived there. And I was just there for my class 50th class reunion and hung around downtown. And it's great to see how it's always changing, yet it always kind of stays the same. It was just a great place to grow up.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's a really good way to kind of end our conversation. I mean, that was basically the whole point, wasn't it? That it would be a great place to live and grow up.
Absolutely.
So, Ted, tell me, if someone wants to learn more about Greendale, what's their first step?
Well, the first step would be if you're just, you know, want to be on the internet and check that out, you can go to GreendaleHistoricalSociety.org, which is our website, and that'll give you all sorts of links to what's going on in Greendale. You can link to the village's website as well. We have a 24/7 phone number. I can give that out, which is 414-421-1938. So it's the year 1938, and it's 421. So people want to call there and give us a message, or they can email us at greendalereply@gmail.com. If they want to come to Greendale, stop in at the Welcome Center. We'd be glad to give you a tour and guide you through the options of Greendale.
And you mentioned a book that also explains some of that background.
Yeah, the book is, we have two books that we publish. The first one is Main Street Ready Made. And the other is Greendale Remembers, which is an oral history of Greendale. Both of these are published by the Society. You can find them on our website or by calling that number.
Okay, sounds great. Well, Ted and Mary Minola, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Alice, thank you for inviting us.
You bet. Ted and Mary are both involved with the Greendale's Historical Society. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Lake Superior Magazine with editor Connie LeMay. If you have any questions about Lake Superior, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org.